Dead On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. This is HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, your home for what we like to call conversation radio. Available to you as you wish, either live on the rerun stream or via podcast, any way you choose. The Listen Live button is at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, and the pop-up player works great with Windows Media Player. If you need other links that aren't necessarily Windows Media Player driven, you can also find them at WhiteRoseSociety.org under the subdomain for this program, both low bandwidth and high bandwidth. And yeah, we still maintain a stream that people can listen to who have dial-up, and that's not a criticism. It's like, oh, you've got dial-up. No, it's a recognition that there is still a whole lot of this country that is underserved by the interweb tubes revolution. And you can find them, as I said, at White Rose Society under the subdomain of this program. You're welcome to pop into the chat room. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. It's free. It's easy. Jump right in. The conversation is fine. And what else? Well, there's a PayPal button there. And let's just get this out of the way. Everybody knows, unless you're brand new to the program, that this effort is an ongoing, persistent, constant struggle. And it is your determination that keeps all of this going. And we are deeply grateful for that. And so by the way, program announcement. I had said there won't be a program tomorrow. There will be a program tomorrow. I'm not going to leave in order so that Ferg doesn't have to just be worn the F out when he gets home from school. Yes, he's trying the public school thing again. He just got tired of seeing my smiling face every day of his life and needed to see some others. So he'd be really worn out, and we'd have to jump on the road, and yeah, it's just a pain in the butt. So we will leave creepy early Saturday morning and drive up to Morgantown and across to Cumberland, Maryland, where we will be. There will be a showing of The Last Mountain Saturday evening, and after that, we'll do a little talky-talky and sort of follow up to what happens after that movie ends. If you've never seen The Last Mountain, I might note to you that I am, in fact, the Guy Fliegman of that film. If you've ever seen Galaxy Quest, you know what I'm talking about. I'm the guy, you know, because I'm like in there for 2.7 seconds. And I've got like one line. Yeah, naturally the flyers for the event, I'm told, say, featuring Bob Kincaid, or Bob Kincaid featured in. No! If I had a red Star Trek shirt, I would wear it Saturday evening. Guy Fliegman. Oh! But I'm really looking forward to it because where the movie ends is where the current state of the struggle against mountaintop removal presently exists. So there you go, Cumberland, Maryland, 7 o'clock Saturday night. Thank you, Randy, coming through loud and clear. Appreciate it. Thank you especially, Randy, for getting us started this evening. It means, indeed, a very great deal to have your help. We ended the night last night, We were trying to raise $245. We ended at $185 to go. So that meant we raised $60 last night. So tonight would be $150 plus $330, roughly. Okay, so $300 tonight we need to raise. And Randy just got us started. Thank you very kindly, Randy. It is deeply appreciated. You know, there's a traditional mail address if you prefer to contribute that way, because I know a lot of people get creeped out by PayPal. And that address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Please remember, checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not receive them and does not deal with them. It's Boss Man Wayne who goes to the mailbox and is pleasantly surprised whenever he's not greeted by an echo there. Hello? 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 Yeah. So either way is fine as we move toward the weekend, and in fact toward the end of the month of August, and try to climb out of the July hole. And we're getting there. Well, we got out of the July hole. Now we're in the August hole. So anyway. Now, where do we begin on Thorn in the Side Thursday? I know that we have talked a lot about gun violence over the... Well, we've been talking about it for a while, and frankly, the part of the reason that I am drawn to those stories, and I think, as far as I can tell, you appreciate having them highlighted, it has to do with the fact that these stories take place and they happen and even after the for-profit media have ground the last little bit of profit out of them, because remember, if CNN and Anderson Cooper show up in your town because you've had a disaster, it's because the boys in the marketing department at CNN have decided that they can go out and sell more advertisements to play in the midst of the live team coverage of your disaster. Because no profit-driven media are in business for the purpose of bringing content to you. They are in business for the purpose of delivering you to potential businesses, or making you, turning you from potential customers to actual customers of the businesses that choose to advertise with them. That's the real reason for the for-profit media. Doesn't matter if it's news or wrestling or the Turtle Man or Duck Dynasty or the Real Housewives of Kalamazoo. It don't matter. It's all about delivering you to people who want to separate you from your money. Got it? Yeah. Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you, Henry. Thank you very kindly, Henry, getting us a little further, getting us considerably further down the road. Our fundraising total for the evening now equaling $75, and that's awesome. That provides real hope. Thank you very kindly. And, yeah, I will keep this anonymous, I think I'm supposed to. Not creeped out by PayPal, but I just prefer to keep a unionized postal worker employed. I understand that. And, like I said, Boss Man Wayne loves it when he's not being met by an echo. But to get back to the subject at hand. These stories within the rubric established in Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman, you know, attention must be paid. And so whether it's three teenagers slaughtering an innocent young Australian man in Oklahomistan, or a kid in Dundee, Michigan, the 3.5-year-old who blows himself away because the lawful, awful gun owner couldn't be bothered to reach the pistol up and put it out of the reach of, say, 3.5-year-olds. Attention must be paid. And yet, with a couple of truly horrifying, well, at least one truly horrifying, okay, two truly horrifying stories out there. One that doesn't end in horror and another that does. The one that ends in horror from Gwinnett County, Georgia, you know, where they take their freedom protecting gun owning real serious like. A story from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution of a Georgia man who allegedly shot a 3-year-old relative during an argument with another family member. He meant presumably to shoot the other family member, but blew the 3-year-old away instead, you know, because freedom, Wolverines! Right? Let's see, who was it? It was near Lilburn, Georgia. And Gwinnett County Police Corporal Jake Smith said, "At this time, we don't think he intended to actually shoot that child, but we do believe he was trying to shoot somebody else that was here." Right, because, well, 3-year-olds and 3.5-year-olds, they're, you know, it's part, you know, we're a very patriotic country, aren't we? And that's the price that we demand for being able to make sure that the government can't put the jackboot of its tyranny down on our throats before they ship us off to them Kenyan Muslim socialist white people hating FEMA camps. I think we should start a campaign. And gosh, if the Horn had a million listeners, which I don't think I would want any more than I'd want $1 million. But if we had a million listeners, we could start a campaign to demand that every child killed by virtue of this country's vile, sick, filthy, disgusting, blood-sodden, bloodthirsty, abattoir-creating fascination with firearms, that every child so killed should be given a complete military honor guard, a flag-draped coffin, and a 21 goddamn gun salute. Because truly, it is the 3-year-olds and the 3.5-year-olds who are paying the price for our freedom, Wolverines! The other story comes out of Tennessee. This one is a 5-year-old and not a 3-year-old. One of the big differences between 3-year-olds and 5-year-olds is that 5-year-olds generally get to go to kindergarten. This story happened to, well, ripped from the pages of the headlines. Once again, last night we talked about Shelby County, Alabama. Well, now we're talking about Shelby County, Tennessee. And if I'm not mistaken, Shelby County, Tennessee is down there where they have them Tennessee walking horses that they torture until they walk funny. Yeah. Happened about 7:30 a.m. at Westside Elementary School, when a kindergartner, a 5-year-old, brought a freedom protecting shooting gun pistol to class with him in his backpack. The Shelby County Schools put out a press release that said, "While waiting for the opening bell in the cafeteria, the firearm discharged accidentally inside the child's backpack. Nobody is injured, and staff immediately took possession of the backpack." The kindergartner was, of course, detained. SCS Security. No, that's not the latest thing that they're calling Black, what was it, Black Rock or whatever. No, that's not Shelby County School Security Oh, no, that's not. That's okay. I'm sorry. Shelby County. What was I thinking? That's not where the Tennessee walking horses come from. Shelby County School Security and the Memphis Police Department responded quickly, and the matter is now under investigation. There is no evidence at this time of harmful intent. However, weapons of any kind are prohibited on campuses, and this student will be disciplined in accordance with the state's zero tolerance policy. What the does that mean? We going to waterboard the five-year-old for a little bit? The child was being held inside the principal's office. Did you catch that? Weapons of any kind are prohibited on Shelby County Schools campuses. Well, I am sure that the Tennessee legislature will have to meet in an extraordinary special session and make sure that that is forever remedied. Because we cannot afford to have the Second Amendment of the Constitution, which provides the very basis for all the other freedoms we enjoy in this great land that God and Jeebus done give to us. We cannot tolerate it for the Second Amendment to be threatened by a bunch of namby-pamby sissies who think that guns shouldn't be on school grounds. Because, you know, the only thing that'll stop a bad five-year-old with a gun is a good five-year-old with a gun. Preston warmly told WMCT, we're going to have to get together to see what we should do from this moment on, because you know what? Because you know what you can do when you're sitting back watching it on the news, but when it's happening right in your face, that's a lot. I like blue cheese on my word salad. One wonders if the five-year-old will be forever sentenced to alternative school. Hey, thanks, Kate. That's $100 we're at now toward taking care of fundraising for the evening. 20 folks, $10 apiece. We can get there. Marty noting, I'm rather certain that swats are called for. Problem is, the principal should be swatting the parents. Because there's the question, once again. Before we think about detaining the child or whether or not the child should be prosecuted within the full meaning of the Shelby County School's zero tolerance policy, maybe we ought to be taking a look at how it is that the damned engine of death wound up in the little fella's back. I'm assuming it was a little fella. It might have been a little girl because the gun was never actually deliberately fired. You know, it was just a case where the backpack got dropped and it went off, kind of like that case that we had last week of the woman who had to have her more fashionable handbag, the one that she had forgotten that she had put the 25 caliber semi-automatic gold-plated pistol that Daddy had done give her from Orlando, Florida, in her bag when she was going to meet her best friend at the Starbucks for a Venti half-calf mocha caramel macchiato with extra soy foam, probably for the low Starbucks price of $15.62. But she forgot, and she dropped her bag on the floor and shot her buddy in the leg, but everybody's all right. Nobody got hurt. Right? Irish Dave noting, that three-year-old made the ultimate sacrifice for the beloved Second Amendment to the Holy Constitution. If you die in Shelby County, have you gone to a better place? Bad target selection. Felony or mere misdemeanor? I know. Ron and Raleigh, I always know there's going to be trouble when the subject line begins, Bob, Bob, Bob. But it does. Bob, Bob, Bob. Bob, Bob, Iran. You can't expect good parents to send their precious tyke to the free fire zone of kindergarten without his personal protection. Ron, that's personal freedom protection. I mean, let's stay within the tropes, okay? So that brings us up to Larry Pratt, who is basically a neck looking for a Thorazine dart, who, for reasons passing all understanding, except for the fact that it was the for-profit media and everything that CNN does, see above, is designed to make you go buy some crap that you neither need nor want, and F, actually fulfilling some sort of goal that has something to do with the Fourth Estate and certain constitutional obligations having to do with real freedom, not the gun kind. The Booker, that's Booker, not Booger, the Booker, although it sounds a lot like Booker if you're talking to somebody up in eastern PA, up in the Poconos or whatever. Yeah, I don't want no Bookers in my... No. Booker's bourbon? That's disgusting. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm completely mistaken. This is merely a picture of Larry Pratt on the Situation Room. No, this is from the Talk to Solomon show, featuring Stan Solomon. And Stan Solomon was talking about the fact that electroconvulsive therapy, this story's over at Raw Story, electroconvulsive therapy has become a popular treatment for bipolar disorder. Electroconvulsive therapy, that's also known as electroshock therapy. Let's go to the tape. Now, there's a point to all this. This isn't just a litany of how squirrely and screwed up and what an unmitigated mess our country is. No, that's not this. Did I say tape? Let us go to the digital recording. Although in broadcast lingo, it does sound a lot cooler to say, roll tape! Tell us about it. Oh, Stan Solomon, you are a winner.
Fort Myers, Florida. Every 15 minutes, they roll in a patient and roll them out after giving them electroshock therapy. It's making a huge comeback. Now, they're saying, hey, it's quicker than some drugs and all that type of thing. Well, so is a bullet. But the fact is...
Whoa, what? Huh? Now, see, I won't mention who did it, but I've had... Very cogent suggestion passed along that I let the stupid clip roll all the way through before I start talking about it. And it's a good suggestion. But you have to understand that this kind of crazy has a very real impact on me. Did you hear that? This Stan Solomon guy screeching, there's a saying, hey, it's quicker than some drugs and all that type of thing. I never heard that saying, hey, it's quicker than the drugs and some of that type of thing. It really doesn't have the pithiness required to become a saying. But so is a bullet. Did this right-wing goober just suggest that maybe we would be better off shooting the mentally ill? Whew. I knew I forgot something today. I went out to do laundry, and I forgot to stop and buy an extra case of tequila. Not the good stuff. Oh, the real rot gut stuff. Note coming in from Jim. Shock treatments? You're kidding, yes? So dangerous to the brain. Lord, Jim, I'm kidding, no. I'm really serious, yes. But wait, okay, so, but see, Jim is going to a place where an actual legitimate discussion of the psychiatric and medical efficacy of electroshock therapy might be something we could discuss. And I think most of us would come down pretty much on the same side of the issue, i.e. don't do it. But you have to remember, what you're about to hear and what you've already heard comes from the mind, of the right wingers who have the giant amygdalas, the really, really big lizard brains. The lizard brain part is pre caveman stuff. I mean, I no longer talk poorly, thank you, Dr. John, about Neanderthals. And I'm not going to talk poorly about Cro-Magnon or any of the humans or proto. I feel a deep and abiding, if not love, affection for all of our common pre-human ancestors. And the more we learn about them, the more we learn about ourselves. And the more that we try to project onto them, the more we find out about ourselves, less than what we project about them, if that makes any sense. But what I'm getting at here is that these people with the giant amygdalas, they don't see things the way we see things. So instead of talking about electroshock therapy within the purview of is this a good idea or not, well, I'm going back to the beginning, and I'm going to let this roll as long as I can before the furniture kicking starts.
Fort Myers, Florida. Every 15 minutes, they roll in a patient and roll them out after giving them electroshock therapy. It's making a huge comeback. Now, they'll say, hey, it's quicker than some drugs and all that type of thing. Well, so is a bullet. But the fact is that I am telling you, I believe that we're going to see things get worse before they get better, and you're going to see people that are going to be...
Oh, no. It's going to get... Okay, I can still work with this. It's going to get worse before it gets better. The question is, even if you say it's going to get worse before it gets better, anybody who wants to see it get better has got to be actively engaged in trying to figure out how to make it better. And if you're working on how to make it better, you also have to work on how do we define better. Jesus, the nuance will absolutely wear you out. That's part of why it's so easy, so much simpler, so much more comfortable, and apparently so much more profitable just to be a right-wing, little right-wing proto-fascist and, you know, well, all right, Bob, behave.
I believe that we're going to...
Notice the use of I believe. So it's kind of like when you're learning a language and you realize that there are certain, well, for instance, in Latin, little itty-bitty tiny words like ut, U-T. The minute you see ut, you know that that defines the tenor, content, quality, and mode of expression of everything that comes after that little word ut, U-T. So too with I believe. When a right-winger is screeching into what sounds very much like the condenser microphone on a 1974 Kmart brand cassette tape player and says, I believe, you know that everything that comes after I believe is going to be arrant bullshit. Hence this.
I am telling you, I believe that we're going to see things get worse before they get better. And you're going to see people that are going to be, quote-unquote, examined and treated because they are, quote-unquote, incorrigible, and however they define incorrigible, maybe resisting when people come crashing into your house.
I'll be honest, candid. I have never heard of a case of someone being mentally examined for resisting when someone comes crashing through the house. In fact, when it's law enforcement that comes crashing through the house, people are seldom defined as incorrigible because, quite frequently, like the granny in Atlanta a few years ago, they get dead before they can be defined as incorrigible because granny's sitting there with the family shooting iron in her lap, and when they come through the door, she starts plinking. And they plink back and fill her full of lead. Now, the lead actually goes through. She's an old lady and, you know, not very good at stopping bullets, but right. But this is, you know, this is I don't know what the, oh, what was the name of this program? Hello. Talk to Solomon Show. I'm guessing a better, and that's not a very catchy title, so just in the interest of being helpful, I would like to suggest that the Talk to Solomon Show be renamed the Paranoia on Parade Show. So here we are with people being examined for mental illness because they're deemed incorrigible because they resist people busting through their house or some such.
Quote, unquote, incorrigible, and however they defined incorrigible. Maybe resisting when people come crashing into your house. Your thoughts, because they are becoming very much a able to defend yourself and unable to defend yourself country.
Well, and I think it...
And see, that's the trick. All this hooting and hollering about shock therapy has been a setup for Larry Pratt of Gun Goobers of America. Or the SDS, which once upon a time stood for Students for a Democratic Society, but now stands for the Short Dick Society. So take it away, Larry. Now, remember, we've got a setup here all about electroshock therapy, and now we've believed our way into thinking that people are going to be subjected to electroshock therapy because they're going to be deemed incorrigible because they resist somebody busting through their house.
Able to defend yourself and unable to defend yourself country.
Well, and I think part of that is what we're seeing in Obamacare. This is going to be what you're talking about.
What? I think what you're seeing there is that this is part of Obamacare. Now, I know, because the Republicans reminded us repeatedly over the course of months and months and months and perhaps even a year or more, well, that's a 1,400-page bill. And even a member of the Supreme Court of the United States said, well, you can't expect me to read that much, can you? So, yeah, I worked that in there, can you? So, yeah, it's a big bill. And, yeah, we don't... I don't. Maybe you do. I mean, but I don't know everything that's in there. We can talk about hitting the high points. And then there's the imaginary death panels that are in there and stuff like that. But I'm pretty sure that there's no electroshock therapy mandate in the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, because then it wouldn't be the patient protection part, right? Please? Please, Larry Pratt of Gun Goobers of America, do go on.
What we're seeing in Obamacare, this is going to be what you're talking about in several times over.
God bless you, Right Wing Watch. I'm lost. We're becoming a very much an able to defend yourself and an unable to defend yourself country. This is going to be what you're talking about several times over. In other words, people are going to be subjected to electroshock for wanting to protect freedoms with their firearms. Wolverines. So here we have, and apparently this is having a certain amount of resonance. Irish Dave noting, so giant amygdalas are kind of like the penis, you know, size matters. Maybe more so even. this is really bothering Irish Dave, this whole thread. But Bob, I thought incorrigible was bulletproof. No, wait, five-year-olds, those that engage in crazy talk are often stippies, a.k.a. members of the two-inch police. Oh, God, Irish Dave. Stippies. But in all seriousness, Jim notes, people are never the same after this procedure. Never what is... Never. What's next? Lobotomies? Well, you know, Bill in Cleveland did mention that classic line last night. I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy. But this does serve a purpose, and I am going somewhere with this. And the somewhere I'm going is to the worst nightmare of Ted Nugent and Wayne LaPierre and, yes, Larry Pratt of Gun Goobers of America. Their worst nightmare. And bear in mind, their worst nightmare is not the day when the Obama or FEMA people come and confiscate all our guns and send us off to the Kenyan re-education camps. That's not their worst nightmare. Not at all. No. Their worst nightmare is when something happens that proves them hopelessly, and dare I say it, incorrigibly wrong. That has happened. I give you a heroic woman by the name of Antoinette Tough, who is the bookkeeper at an Orwellianly named school near Atlanta called the Ronald E. McNair Discovery Learning Academy. By near Atlanta, I mean Decatur, Georgia. I give you also 20-year-old Michael Brandon Hill, who entered the Ronald E. McNair Discovery Learning Academy in Decatur, Georgia, with a semi-automatic weapon and about 500 rounds of ammunition for it. And we have seen from Sandy Hook to Blacksburg, Virginia, to Aurora, Colorado, to Columbine, to Tucson, and 100 places in between, enough to know that just 500 rounds of ammunition, 20-year-old Michael, what was his name again, Michael Brandon Hill, school. And at this point in time, you say things like that, And your spine starches out a little bit as if you're waiting for the physical quality of a blow to hit you. But not this time. Not this time. Oh, no. And the whole reason is nothing more and nothing less than Antoinette Tough. Goddess of irony, working overtime again, bringing us Antoinette Tough. Spelled T-U-F-F. The bookkeeper at the Discovery Ronald McNair Institute, probably a charter school thingy. It was she, not an armed teacher. It was she, not a police officer. It was she, not a good guy with a gun, just Antoinette Tough, who was the first point of contact for Michael Brandon Hill. and his semi-automatic weapon and his 500 rounds of ammunition. It was she who picked up the phone and called 911. And we've all shared and listened to some pretty horrifying audio over the years. This qualifies quite possibly as the best audio it has ever been my privilege to share with you. Here then is what heroism sounds like.
She sounds like she loves you a lot. You're on the phone with a relative? Yes. What'd you say, sir? He said he should have just went to the mental hospital instead of doing this because he's not on his medication. But do you want me to try? I can help you. You want me to try? You want to talk to them? Want me to talk to them and try to? Okay, well, let me talk to them and let's see if we can work it out so that you don't have to go away with them for a long time. No, it does matter. I can let them know that you have not tried to harm me or do anything with me or anything if you want to. But that doesn't make any difference. You didn't hit anybody. So, okay, let me ask you this, ma'am. He didn't hit anybody. He just shot outside the door. If I walk out there with him, so they won't shoot him or anything like that, he wants to give himself up. Is that okay? They won't shoot him?
Yes,
and
ma'am.
And he said he just want to go to the hospital?
Okay. She said, hold on one moment.
Okay, she said, hold on, and she's going to talk to the police officer, and I'll go out there with you. Well, don't feel bad, baby. My husband just left me after 33 years. But, yes, you do. I mean, I'm sitting here with you and talking to you about it. I got a son that's multiple disabled. Can I speak to her? Let her know that I'm going to go with you. You want me to talk to her? No, you didn't, baby. It's all going to be well. The lady's going to talk to the police. Hold on a second, okay?
Uh-huh. Don't hang up the phone.
Okay, hold on. He wants me to go over here to the intercom, so hold on for me, okay?
Okay,
wait a minute. So can you talk to the police and let them know that I'm going to walk out there with him and he wants to give himself up?
Okay, I am. Let me get an okay from them, okay?
Okay. And you let me know what we need to do. He wants me to go on the intercom and let everybody know that he's sorry, okay?
Okay.
Okay, hold on. Ma'am?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, he's going to come on now. But he wants to know, what do you want him to do with the gun?
Okay.
Or you want to send a police officer in? And he said he'll be on the ground with his hands behind his back, and I'll take the gun from him and put it over here on the other side by me.
Okay, one more.
Okay. Put all that over here so that way they won't see it, okay? Come over here and put it over here on this. Okay. Put it all up there, okay.
He's put the weapons down?
Yeah. So hold on before you come. He's put everything down.
Okay.
So and he's going to get on the floor, so tell him to hold on a minute. So let him get everything together. He's getting it all together. Okay. Tell me when you're ready, then I tell him to come on in. Okay, he wants to drink his bottle of water, so let him drink his... Let him get it together. Okay.
Okay.
Did you want me to call somebody and talk to somebody for you? Okay. We're not going to hate you, baby. It's a good thing that you giving up, so we're not going to hate you.
Okay. Ma'am, you're doing a great job.
So let's do it before the helicopters and stuff like that come. So you hear them? Okay. So would you want to go ahead and want me to tell him to come on in now? Okay. He's getting everything out of his pockets now.
Okay.
He said the gun may come back and say it's stolen, but if not, he knows the whole story about the gun, and he'll let you all know that.
Okay.
Do y'all want him to take his belt off?
That's fine. Just take all his weapons off.
Okay. She said that's fine. Take all your weapons off. She said he don't have no more weapons.
Okay.
Okay. So you going? Okay, he on the ground now with his hands behind the back. Tell the officers don't come in with any guns, no come in shooting anything, so they can come on in, and I'll buzz them in.
Okay.
So hold on, just sit right there, and I'ma buzz them in, okay? So you'll know when they're coming, okay? Okay. So just stay there calm. Don't worry about it. I'ma sit right here so they'll see that you're trying not to harm me, okay? Okay.
Okay.
It's gonna be all right, sweet. I just want you to know that I love you, though, okay? And I'm proud of you. That's a good thing that you've just given up, and don't worry about it. We all go through something in life. No, you don't want that. No, you don't want that. You're going to be okay. I thought the same thing. You know, I tried to commit suicide last year after my husband left me. But look at me now. I'm still working and everything is okay. Your name is Michael what? Michael Hill? When the weather in the harbor? The people came from Inner Harbor and planted a gun? Or the drums from Inner Harbor? Oh, okay, so you came with the kids that played the drums for the Inner Harbor? Oh, for Red Ribbon Week, so you was actually in there doing all of that with them? Oh, how awesome. So that means I've seen you before then. Oh, okay. Y'all play them drums and stuff real good. Okay, he said that they can come on in now. He needs to go to the hospital.
Okay.
And he doesn't have any weapons on him or anything like that. He's laying on the floor, and he doesn't have any weapons. He's got everything out of his pocket. There's no, only thing he has on his belt. Everything is out of his pocket. Everything is sitting here on the counter. So all we need to do is they can just come and I'm going to bug them in so he'll know that they're here and everything, and they can come on in and get him and take him to the hospital.
Okay, one moment.
Okay. Yeah, she says she's going to let them know. She's talking to them now to let them know to come on in and to take you to the hospital, okay? No, you stay right there. You fine. He said, do you want him to go out there with his hands up or you want him to stay right here?
Stay right where he is.
Okay, she said stay right there where you are. Guess what? He wants to know, can he get some of his water right quick? Yes, Michael. You said Michael Hill, right?
Yes.
Okay. Guess what, Michael? My last name is Hill, too. You know, my mom was a Hill. He said, what are y'all waiting for? What's taking them so long to come on?
Okay. One moment.
She said she's getting to them now. They're coming. They're coming. So just hold on, Michael. Go ahead and lay down. Go ahead and lay down. Just don't put your phone. Okay, you just got your phone? Okay, that's fine. Tell him to come on. Come on. Okay, he just got his phone. That's all he got is his phone. It's just him. Okay, it's just him. Hello?
Yes.
I'm telling you something, babe. I ain't got this rough kid all day of my life.
Me either. But you did great.
Oh, Jesus.
You did great.
Bortnicks.
It is possible for me to let a clip roll through from beginning to end. I got tears in my eyes. I'm choked up. Because, you see, that really is the worst nightmare of Larry Pratt and Wayne LaPierre and Ted Nugent. Because that is proof. And I mean empirical proof. That the only thing that can stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun is bullshit. Did you notice that? Now, that clip is 8 minutes and 33 seconds long. And although she was absolutely devastated with fear, because of the fact that she insisted on treating this person as a human being, not simply the biological agent behind the engine of death, we may never know how many little bodies were spared from being rendered into hunks of lifeless meat. The other thing that grabbed me, however, is that throughout the whole exchange, even though she is terrified, she remains calm. And even though there are guns involved and the potential for unspeakable horror a split second away, she, by force of will, Antoinette Hill Tough, or maybe just Antoinette Tough, her mama was a Hill, she said, she does the spectacular. And yet after she, by herself, alone, with nothing more than a telephone contact to a 911 dispatch operator, and certainly no gun, did all the heavy lifting, so to speak. Did you notice what happened, or did you hear what happened when the cops entered the room? The big, burly, manly cops. Let's see. You hear all that craziness in the background?
Okay, he just got his phone. That's all he got is his phone. It's just him.
Get on the ground! Do not move! Do not move! Just stay on the ground! Them big, tough, gun-wielding cops were more terrified than she was. And there they were, armed to the teeth with enough body armor to march into a machine gun nest. Get on the ground! Do not move! When the guy's on the ground and not going to move, the only thing in the world he doesn't want to do is get shot up by the cops any more than he wants to shoot up the children. Get on the ground! Do not move! The worst nightmare of Ted Nugent. The worst nightmare of Larry Pratt. The worst nightmare of Wayne LaPierre and all the lawful gun owners who, in just a split second time, can actually become awful gun owners. The survival of precious little children. A nightmare that Wayne LaPierre and Larry Pratt and Ted Nugent can scarcely even tolerate. Because it invalidates every last thing that they hold dear about their beloved anachronism, their adored, their fetishized Second Amendment. So no, it doesn't take arming teachers to the teeth. it doesn't take having campus security officers, one every 3 feet throughout the school, so that a child who is trying to learn learns more about the terrifying qualities, about the fact that their country is an armed camp. I know next to nothing about this heroic woman. Marty pointed out that the school is actually named for one of those who died in STS-51, also known incorrectly as the Challenger explosion. I don't know what known incorrectly as means, but Ronald McNair was on the Challenger when it blew up. And they named a school after him in Atlanta. I mean, no disrespect to the memory of Ronald McNair, but I think I'd get real busy renaming that school the Antoinette Tough School. Because in a matter of the few minutes that it took, 8 thereabouts, maybe 9, 10, if you calculate what went on before she called, in those few minutes, she kept the McNair Discovery School from becoming another one of those names that we know so well and wish we didn't. How many of us can say, and truly, I'll say it, I imagine you can too, or would be willing to, say that we wish we had never, ever heard the name Sandy Hook Elementary? How many of us would have blissfully gone through our lives had we never heard the name Columbine? Who among us, except for folks who live in the fairly immediate area, have any idea where Aurora, Colorado is, except for the fact that it was turned into a charnel house because this country is obsessed with firearms? I would that the only thing that I knew about Tucson, Arizona, is that it is the home of a nice little, reasonably progressive community in that otherwise batshit crazy state. And on and on. I wish that Blacksburg, Virginia was just the name of the town where the Hokies, what the hell's a Hokie, play football, and where occasionally my beloved Mountaineers have gone to meet an ignominious defeat. I wish that's all I knew about it. But this is a country driven out of its mind by firearms. Not by drugs, unless you're talking about the pharmaceutical ones, but by firearms. Of course, a great deal of this story will be lost probably because the PR machine of the right wing and the gun goobs will be dedicated to, see, he even said he's mentally ill. See, he didn't have no business with a gun. That's what the problem was. We got to be able to sort out these mentally ill people, make sure. But the fact of the matter is, a lone woman, armed only with the determination that none of those around whom she worked and the precious little charges who entered that school every day should not, armed only with the determination that they should not be harmed, faced down grim death itself and saved untold lives, not with a gun, but with her heart.
with her great good heart. And somewhere, ages and ages hence, as the poet has said, children now 5, now 6, now 7, perhaps 87, will sit around a Thanksgiving table and look at children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, 6 and 7 years old, and say, "Do you know how I got to be here? I got to be here because one woman loved me and all my classmates, and even a man with 500 rounds of ammunition more than she loved even her own life." That is how I got to be here. And that is how you got to be here. Because a good heart can do so much more. There is so much misery, and so much bad news, and so much tomfoolery, and so much hate, and so much bloodshed, and so much lunacy that pours out of the filthy gutters of the right wing on any day, any month, any week, that when we have a chance to share something like this, well, you just kind of gotta. I don't reckon they'll give Antoinette Tough a parade. I don't reckon they'll put up a statue to her. I don't reckon they'll change the name of the school. But ages and ages hence, perhaps the name of Antoinette Tough will achieve its own sort of immortality. Kate with a note, "Thank you for this clip. I'm still in tears. I was surprised, well maybe not, that when confronting a mentally disturbed person, shouting only exaggerates the drama. After hour and hours of nonviolent crisis intervention, that's the first thing I learned. Don't raise your voice in a threatening manner. It's my hope that the local police department will review this tape and retrain their response teams. May the goddess bless Antoinette." Indeed, indeed. Kate also... just a second here. Got it. Yeah. Recalcitrant computer. Dadgummit. Oh, by the way, if you're on hold, please stay there. Lines will be open. This is pretty much the end of the filibobster for this evening. And thus, you are welcome to join the discussion. The number is 304-658-3333. If you want to reach the program by Skype, that handle is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. It all works any way you choose. That's by no means the be-all and end-all of the stories for this evening. And there's lots more, whether it be... it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. You get the idea. But I just love... I love the idea of Ted Nugent rolling around in his fevered nightmare sleep, horrified by the fact that a gun wouldn't have done a damned thing in that terrifying situation. Now, another note from Kate. She says, hey, Bob, please repeat what you said yesterday. To wit, since I'm going to be out of town for a long stretch next month, if we don't keep the contributions coming in, there won't be any horn when I get back to the mansion. She said, paraphrasing here. You paraphrase very well, Kate. I'm sure there are new folks in the audience who weren't here on the day we logged onto the website and read that there will be no broadcasting because the internet bill didn't get paid. It'd be a shame if that happened again. It would be, and it's really stressful to get home and deal with something like that, trust me. But we are, we're $100 to the good, $200 to go. And hopefully we'll get there and wrap up the week in rare form tomorrow. So like I said, light them up, 304-658-3333 or Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. We'll take a break and, gosh, seems like Brad and Desi have been on vacation forever. Vacation? What is this vacation I keep hearing about? But anyway, Brad and Desi are back, and they've got a Green News report for us. And, well, shucks, I hate to miss that, and thus we won't. So here we are, Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And the conversation radio lamp is lighted.
It's Thursday, August 22nd, 2013.
Our special While We Were Out edition.
Highly radioactive contaminated water leaking uncontrollably into the ground.
Fukushima nuclear situation increased to incident level 3. UN says climate change still happening and still a problem. Texas towns run out of water because of fracking. Wildfires and water fights hit the dried out west. Plus,
in the year 2000, the solar water heater behind me, which is being dedicated today, will still be here, supplying cheap, efficient energy.
The White House goes solar again.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This solar heater can either be a curiosity, a museum piece, an example of a road not taken.
Yes, it'll be all of the above. President Carter, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, glad to see you made it out of the mountains without being eaten by a bear. Glad I did, too.
Yes, it was great to be off-grid, but so much happened while we were gone.
Bring it.
Well, first, the biggest news.
Despite saying that everything was cool at Fukushima a year and a half ago, things are not cool there.
In Japan, nuclear regulators have upgraded the severity of the situation at the crippled Fukushima nuclear power plant to a level 3, a serious incident on the international scale for nuclear incidents after another major leak of radioactive contaminated wastewater was discovered.
We're talking about hundreds of tons of water that is used to cool the crippled plant, now leaking into the ground, as well as leaking into the ocean, which it has been doing for quite some time. That incident level you talk about could go up to 7. Currently, it's only at 3, but we definitely need to keep our eyes on that one.
Oh, yeah. A draft version of the UN's next big summary on climate science from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has been leaked, and it has 3 big takeaways.
Everything's okay, the whole thing's a conspiracy, and I forget the third thing.
No.
Oops.
The real big deal is that the global scientific community is even more convinced than ever before, with 95% certainty now, that human activities are the primary driver causing the indisputable rise in global temperatures.
As if scientists know anything about science.
As if. They also predict that we are already locked in to an increase in extreme heat waves, like the deadly 2003 European heat wave, and that extreme heat will become just an average summer for some regions. That draft report also triples estimates of sea level rise, now predicting a rise of 3 feet over the next 80 years. President Obama's Hurricane Sandy Rebuilding Task Force said Monday that we should not rebuild at all in some coastal areas and should raise buildings in others while also investing in major infrastructure improvements, including hardening the electrical grid.
You mean raise, R-A-I-S-E, or R-A-Z-E?
Both, actually.
So we should raise them up off the ground, and others we should just destroy.
Exactly. Meanwhile, extreme drought is driving wildfires across the West. 51 active large fires are burning right now in Arizona to Alaska, and the U.S. Forest Service has already burned through 95% of its annual firefighting budget. Also because of drought in the West, federal agencies announced historic cutbacks in water deliveries from major reservoirs on the Colorado River for the first time ever, with cuts of up to 75% for some customers, the highest in history. Some Texas towns are running out of water after selling their water supplies to fracking companies,
oops,
which are now predictably draining their aquifers. And landowners who leased their lands to fracking companies now say those fracking companies are cheating them on royalty payments.
Gosh, I wish someone had warned them.
The Interior Department has weighed in on the controversial proposed Keystone XL pipeline, saying the pipeline will have permanent negative impacts that will hurt the nation's wildlife, and criticized the State Department's draft environmental assessment as inaccurate.
Nice. Any idea when a decision is due from the White House?
No, they are putting that off. But some good news, the Tesla electric car has achieved the best ever safety rating for any car ever tested by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
That after it had received the highest rating ever from Consumer Reports on their regular testing.
Yep.
It's an amazing car. Get me one, please.
The Bureau of Land Management held a lease sale for coal companies to dig up Wyoming and received 0 bids.
Zero?
Zero, because market demand for coal is declining, even from China.
Poor coal. So it's not Obama's war on coal. It's the fact that nobody wants coal.
And finally, guess what's going back onto the White House roof?
Lasers.
Nope. Oh. Solar panels.
Oh, I prefer lasers.
But I'll take solar panels.
So Jimmy Carter put up those solar panels back in the 70s. Ronald Reagan came to office, took them down. Now they're finally going back up.
Yep, Obama promised it 3 years ago. Finally, they're going back up.
Finally, he kept a promise. I'll take it. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we didn't get to today while we were out, please check our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help support the Green News Report. Download us on iTunes, like us on the Facebook, and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your While We Were Out, But Now We're Back, Green News Report.
Past the hour, and this is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and goodness, okay, some lights lighting up. Skype line wide open if you want to jump in, Bob Kincaid, Horn. And a quick announcement, we're going to continue week two of what we started last week. We're sort of trying to revive the original idea, the original intent behind Friday on the Front Porch. Here it is, summer's about a little over half done, I guess, and it's a perfect time for putting your boots up on the porch rail and taking a big swig out of the jug with the corn cob stopper in it and just sitting around and cussing and discussing a little bit. So if you want to be part of the Skype group, shoot me a note via email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and you'll need a Skype account. And I will forward that on to our Skype group moderator, Duncan, who will then send you the appropriate invitation to participate. And we're just looking for a neighborly group discussion, and I think it's as far as I know, it's pretty damn novel. I mean, the for-profit media likes to take four or five experts once in a while and sit them around a table and point cameras at them and let them say inane things. But I don't know of anybody that's just talking, you know, just talking amongst ourselves and really reveling in the real expertise of workaday America. So just if you want to participate, let me know, and we will have week two of Friday on the Front Porch come tomorrow evening. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, Bob, how you doing?
What's happening, Jim?
Well, I've listened to the transcript of that recording that was made during that incident. Oh, with Mrs. Tuff, and I can tell you this. I don't know what type of highest medal for civilian bravery could be struck or meant or made.
Well, doesn't that run you? I'm glad you brought that up, Jim. Shouldn't that run you? I mean, straight up to the top of the nominations list for a Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Oh, absolutely. And for that, they should add and also freedom, bravery.
Yeah.
That is just an incredible. Transcript of that lady and her ability to talk a person down from doing something very horrible, but she is truly a heroine.
Indeed.
I mean, I've done incidents of...
I mean, have you ever heard the likes of that?
No, not quite.
Because,
no.
I mean, I listened to it two or three times, and I've got a pretty good memory. Some would say it's near photographic. And I can't remember any stories of recent vintage that are that even approach the courage that was on display there.
No, absolutely. I mean, I've heard and read stories of people being talked down from attempted suicide from tall buildings, but I mean that's just one person who's gone off the deep end, so to speak. But this lady was there with this guy with weapons, and God only knows what would have happened had she not been there with her savoir faire and ability to simply talk to this disturbed person as another human being. But as far as prevention is concerned, that's the an ounce of prevention is certainly worth a pound of cure. And, of course, with the other people who believe in discharging these guns and stuff like that, as far as I'm concerned, that's an ounce of pretension being worth a pound of manure.
Ooh, well done. Very well said. I'm a little, because you know he didn't get taken to a mental hospital. Those screaming butch cops came barreling through the door, and handcuffed him and dragged him out, and you know, away to the clink he went, which opens the door, Jim, to an entirely different discussion. You know, the right wing and these gun geek freaks claim that they're concerned about the mentally ill, but you know they're not, because if they had their way, they'd probably take the poor dude out and shoot him tomorrow.
Well, with them, it's simply going to be an action passed as an action completed, and you know, as far as they're concerned, her name will pass into the dustbin of history. But in my opinion, I think she should be definitely taken to Washington and given every award possible for saving the lives of how many kids? 87?
If not more.
Well,
I mean, I saw the footage of all the children streaming out of that school. And remember, this thing was far... The event itself was far from determined, because in the one thing that it's hard to hear in that is that, you know, it's obvious she's carrying on a conversation with him. And one of the things that he says is, yeah, but I've already shot my gun. So he expects that that's enough to just get him killed on the spot, which it is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And she, no, honey, you just shot that up in the air. That don't count.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I've known a lot of people who have been awarded and have seen in situations individuals who have exhibited incalculable amounts of bravery under fire, but that lady is right up there with them. And I think the president ought to at least convene all of the heads of police departments and things of that nature, as well as Joint Chiefs of Staff and everybody else.
And make the lot of them salute her.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, Ron McNair was the black man who died on the Challenger, and I'm very sorry that happened to all those people, but definitely to rename that school for her would not be a bad idea. And I'm just, well, when I first heard this over TV, I thought to myself, my God in heaven, this woman is, talk about bravery and coolness under fire, or potential fire. But fortunately, she was able to at least treat this person as a human being, and therefore to psychologically disarm him, for lack of a better term, or at least appeal to the better side of his human nature.
But you know what, Jim? I don't think there was any artifice in what she did.
No, it was totally, absolutely, she was speaking from her heart as well as her mind. I mean, she was brave. She was extremely calm, and apparently just had that ability to relate to another human being who could have potentially caused another horrific disaster. And, you know, they could get the heads of the NRA up there, too, for that ceremony. Because I'm so sick and tired of hearing of people who are going into these schools and doing these horrible things. And here's one lady who did prevent it. And I think it's a lesson to everybody and to all those individuals who have been able to only factor in one solution, and that is, you know, you've got to have a gun and come in with guns blazing. And also to the law enforcement people, when they came in there, it sounded like a bunch of stormtroopers in a Jewish synagogue in the 30s.
Yeah, and there's one more point that I want to bring up out of this, Jim. And that is, do you remember after Sandy Hook, I forget which right-wing gas bag it was, but it was one of them, and they kind of all are, who complained that the massacre at Sandy Hook took place because our culture was being feminized. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Okay, so here's that self-same so-called feminized culture. I mean, can we point to the urge to nurture as opposed to kill in this? I mean, I don't want to draw too broadly from the spectrum of where this kind of bravery and heroism comes from.
I don't think you can paint that with too broad a brush. I think it's an auditory and behavioral painting that I can't even think to use that analogy for any type of diagram or mosaic or whatever that could even capture that. I mean, I just have the greatest amount of respect for this lady, and I hope that she will be rewarded and not forgotten. But unfortunately, in this country and in a lot of other places, that type of bravery somehow doesn't meet the qualifications and standards that's set forth by whomever.
Well, there's a very interesting concept that Waggy just introduced into the chat room here, Jim. He says, I think Congress should have to put her up for a congressional award just to hear the GOP explain why she doesn't deserve a medal after the House votes it down.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this should be elevated to the highest realm of the echelons of our government and in every other place. I mean, the lady is, you know, like I said before, she's a hero. And through her, you know, just savoir-faire and courage.
But then again, you know, this story spreads roots out far and wide. And one of those things is, you know, and the young man apparently addressed it. Now, they're going to say the gun's stolen, but it's not. He was obviously under some sort of, I mean, I say obviously because he admitted, you know, that he was off his meds. But he was mentally ill, got his hands on a weapon. And contrary to the gun goober Larry Pratt from the clip that I had run previously saying that gun owners are going to be subjected to electroshock therapy, which is just lunacy. Contrary to that, does the outward verges of how an event like this comes into being in the first place not speak a little bit to how we treat mental illness in this country?
Well, yeah, you were mentioning the fact that this guy, or I heard him say, he was talking about electroconvulsive therapy. You know, that along with lobotomies and things of that nature, they are just playing games with a person's mind. I mean, I don't know what the voltage is or how much electricity they, and I understand they're still using ECT as a means of immobilizing or changing behavior patterns of people. But, you know, once a human brain is subjected to that much electricity and trauma, the people are never the same. They're never the same. And, of course, there's some mental health people, psychiatrists, who still believe in using it. And if you've ever heard or have seen a picture of how that treatment is administered and what they do, it's just absolutely horrifying.
Yes.
And I remember back in the...
I mean, is... Jim, I don't know if you've got the expertise or not to opine on this, but is there any situation in which electroshock therapy is a good thing?
I can't think of, because the brain is made of chemical discharges and electrical impulses and things of that nature. And once you go in there and tamper with that, that human being is never the same. I mean, I can remember my uncle who came back from Guadalcanal, Kwajalein, Peleliu, places like that from World War II, and it was back in the early 50s. And the doctors wanted to give my uncle ECT. And my father was the only one who prevented them from doing that, because he realized back in 1950, and how long ago was that, of what that type of treatment would do to a person. And, you know, the guy was suffering from, you know, post-traumatic stress syndrome of being in some very horrible places in the Pacific. But nonetheless, you know, that's a dreadful, dreadful means of therapy. And, you know, for example, the other thing, these lobotomies, I don't know if they still use that. I'm probably sure they do. You're going to find somebody who's going to experiment with a human being as long as it's not them. But, I mean, you know, if you want to see a good example of that, see Sutherland last summer with Elizabeth Taylor and Montgomery Clift.
Sure.
And, you know, what they wanted to do to immobilize her.
Or
Aunt Vi, you know.
It's a completely different approach to the same, a similar issue, however. How about Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Yeah, exactly. The same thing. Of course, the poor bastard ended up with being, you know, Nurse Ratched or whatever her name was. Who played that role? Louise Fletcher?
Was it?
Louise Fletcher was head nurse. Yeah, I think it was Louise Fletcher. And God knows she played that role well as being just a very cruel, insensitive human being. And she was as much concerned with that man's mental health as she was being in the position of having her authority challenged in that particular ward.
Yeah, no fruit cup.
Right, exactly. But, I mean, you know, these things we just don't know anything about as far as far-reaching effects of radical treatments of this nature. I mean, they used electroshock therapy, not electroshock therapy, but lobotomies on Rosemary Kennedy. And, of course, she went from being a functional 17-year-old, 18-year-old girl to a point of being a 4-year-old who had to be taken it to Wisconsin to St. Coletta's, and she could even, you know, she was like a baby.
Yeah.
And that's what Joe Kennedy did to his own daughter without the permission of his wife, and that's something I'll never forgive that man for.
Oh.
But I've spoken too long here, but I...
Well, one last thing before you go. Marty just dropped a note and agreed. He said, indeed, it was Louise Fletcher as Nurse Ratched. She got an Oscar for it. And then said, has Jim mentioned Frances Farmer?
Whatever happened to Frances Farmer should never have happened to anybody. I mean, Bob, some of the treatments they've used again for people who are mentally ill, for example, they give people these over dosages of insulin that create feelings of paralysis and death and this type of thing. It's sort of like what happened to Alexander Delage in A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
You know, when they had him viewing the movies after giving him the Brodsky treatment or the Ludovico treatment or whatever it was called in the film.
Yeah.
I mean, basically what they had to do was go back and try to, I don't know how they undid what they did. But nonetheless, it's just, I mean, we talked about communists and the use of brainwashing and stuff like that back during the Korean War and that type of thing. I mean, to play with the human mind is a very, very dangerous and, in my opinion, inhuman thing. And but anyway, my accolade to the lady, and like I say, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And for the rest of these people who don't believe that, as far as I'm concerned, their ounces of pretensions are nothing but manure.
Hear, hear. Indeed. Jim, have yourself a good evening.
And likewise.
All right, bye now. Everybody, Jim, and onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bill.
Hey, Bill.
You hit a spot tonight. First of all, the mental health system in the state of Ohio was destroyed. What they did was they closed all the hospitals. Now, there had been some people who had been forgotten about in the back wards. But nowadays, what they do is like a friend of mine went in for 2 or 3 days, and they start handing you pills. Here, take these. Instead of sitting and even talking to a shrink about anything.
A friend of mine told me that an appointment with a psychiatric professional, you know, an MD psychiatrist here, is about 3 minutes long, Bill.
Yeah. They're nothing. And what happened in Ohio, it was a political thing. The hardcore right, hey, how can we save some money? We'll close these hospitals.
Right, and they and see that was on the wave, Bill, of something that was happening nationally.
Yeah.
And it was really, really cynical because under, of course, the Reagan administration.
Yes, sir.
The Republicans claiming that they were somehow exhibiting some sort of compassionate humanity managed to utterly destroy America's mental health system in order to profitize it.
Yes.
And there were and you know, I don't believe in warehousing or institutionalization, generally speaking.
Yep. But there should be a place when it's needed.
Well, there should also be a place, and you know me, I turn things around until they don't look like what they've started out looking like anymore. There should be a place where people who need constant care can be protected from the tender mercies of the for-profit healthcare system.
Yes, sir. I mean, I just had a visit here from the place that provides these home health aides, and I unloaded today. I said, you know, the English have had national health care since post-World War II, I think 46 maybe. And Canada, I was up there one time, and I had a dentist pull the wrong tooth, and middle of the night I had to go to a hospital and get painkiller and penicillin and then turn around, and it was time to go back to Cleveland. So I hit the road from a lake. It's 7 hours, 6 or 7 hours away from Niagara Falls, Canada. And I pulled in there, and I had one of those classrooms, you know. I mean, with the whirlpool and the whole bit, and I sat in a Queen Anne chair all night going, oh. Because I was driving sucking ice cubes for 6 hours for the pain.
Oh, Jesus.
When I saw the dentist, I said, you know, have you ever seen the old Westerns? I said, you pulled the wrong tooth. It's a wonder I didn't come in here with a 44 mag, you know. I said, you know, the old Westerns, the dentist was always, not always, but there was a few of them that had featured that little tidbit in it.
I can never think, you mentioning that makes me remember the fundamental rule, the two fundamental rules that were given me years ago. One is never eat at a place called Mom's.
Yeah.
And never take cards in a game with a man called Doc.
Yeah, very true. Yes. But that was part of the when I started talking about the mental health system. My first wife did psych nursing when she was 23. And was running. We still had two locked wards in one hospital when it was close by, because you could walk to work. Because we rented a house real close. It was a fun place. The guy that we rented from had raised orchids in a greenhouse on the roof of the garage back of the house that we rented. Man, that was a place to go in the wintertime when he'd be out of town on vacation. And I was watering orchids, and it's snowing up the cabunts outside. And
oh, what a great word!
Yeah. Well, yeah, I forget why I picked that one up. And I'd be up there watering it, and you'd smell that ozone, you know, from the springtime. But my wife had to get out of that line of work after I don't know how many years. It was just starting to hurt. She'd come home, and I'd pour coffee and sit and listen, you know.
Yeah.
Because I was good at a few things in this life, and that was one of them. And then she, on the advice of one doctor friend of hers, she got a job delivering babies at a hospital run by the Sallies, you know, the Salvation Army Hospital.
Yeah.
And she still would come home after a rough day, but it wasn't quite the same anymore. It was did a lot for her sanity and mine to not have to, one time a friend of mine was a guest over there, but I knew this guy, and he had been picked up between Detroit and Cleveland with a car full of a little pill called a Red. Downers, you know, and he was selling them, so that was his cop, I think. I mean, I think he was a whack job, but I think why he said he was, you know, beat the judge. And there's always a game people play with if they're smart, if they are devious like that. But, yeah, Jim said the rest of it. I can't say any more than Jim said about that.
Well, and Jim talking about the barbarity of electroshock therapy, I got a tweet in from Isaac. And he said, Bob, I know a person who had it done in Miami, Florida last year. It didn't work. She still has issues.
Yeah, it was a failure. And of course, Jim mentioned the use of insulin shock, too, was another one. Because with her doing that stuff, I read everything I could get my hands on to learn a little bit about this and a little bit about that, and not that a lot of it ever came in handy, but, you know, at least you knew something about it. I read things that were, when I was 13, 14, 15, I was Kierkegaard, for instance, was a little heavy for a kid that age, wasn't it? But it was, and St. Thomas Aquinas, and...
Oh, now see, the Kierkegaard, you can't get hurt.
No.
The St. Thomas Aquinas can absolutely rot your mind.
Yeah, I gave up on it early. Augustine's memoirs I read, and, you know, philosophy of any kind, I just got a book coming to me that was written by a guy who's a fisherman out in Colorado. He was a guy who played some guitar around Cleveland, and, well, I can tell you what era it was. He was wearing a blue work shirt, blue jeans, and fry boots. That should tell anybody of a certain age, you know, when that was. And he writes fishing books. And I did talk to him a couple of years back when I found out that I saw his name on a book in a bookstore before my eyes went to hell. And I said, man, you got a degree in philosophy? And he said, yeah, this beats the hell out of folks. Because I used to kid him. I said, what are you going to do, rent an office and put a sign out and life explained while you wait? No. Or come on in, three philosophers.
No, or a song title that's a favorite of mine, Life Short, Call Now.
Yeah, but I have a question for you. You're a Southern man from the area of West Virginia and Virginia. Have you ever been to Harper's Ferry?
Oh yes.
Isn't that a view of the two rivers?
Oh, it's breathtaking.
But now, when you go out of West of Harper's and you're heading for Sharpsburg. What the hell
were they thinking?
Yeah, well, you know what, those houses are right up against, it's not South Mountain, Maryland Heights, I believe it is called, or was called in the old days. I mean, the backyard has a stone wall.
Yeah.
It goes straight up in the air. And I often, you know, wonder, what the hell is the name of that little town down there?
I'd have to go dig that up.
I thought it had the same name as the town where the shooting took place. Sandy Hook was, I thought, the name of that area, too. That seemed to be a popular name in places that came right up against water. And the C&O Canal was down there, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was leaving one time, I went up, I don't know if it was 17 or what, but there was a sign telling me to go to the Pawpaw Bends, because I'd love to see that. For the C&O Canal, where they blew through a mountain to get the canal through it.
Right.
Up in that area. You've been there?
I have.
Yeah.
And up around Pawpaw?
Yeah. Is it as nice, I mean, a beautiful place as it must be? That water and the...
I'm the wrong guy to ask about that, because when I'm in central Appalachia, I can look at all kinds of beautiful places.
Yeah.
But I'm ruined, Bill. I'm just ruined.
Well, because of what they're doing now.
Yeah. And not just now, but because of what they've done for, you know, 150 years. It's like a few nights ago when I was talking about the Leyland, West Virginia mine disaster.
Yeah.
And the 72-year-old man who survived the blast and walked out.
Yeah.
Now, what if we shall presume that, and I think we can presume it about the Horn family commune, Bill. If we will presume that we are a civilized bunch here in 2013, I think we get to ask, was that 72-year-old in that mine because he just loved mining coal in 1915?
I doubt it.
Or because he had no one and he was as good as dead if he stopped working for the man?
Well, that's been the secret. I mean, working for the man was... When I was a young kid, that's what we were doing, and, you know, when I was in my early age of work.
And little stories long forgotten, like Leyland, West Virginia, there was a significant immigrant population.
Yes, yes.
Who had been brought in, among other things. See, in 1915, in what were called the New River coal fields, well, that was just 8 years on from what had been called the New River coal fields War.
Yeah.
And it was 1907. It was 1907 when Mary Harris Jones, also known better as Mother Jones, started walking around this neighborhood.
Yeah.
Saying things like, when I get to heaven, I will tell God Almighty about West Virginia, because it's pretty clear he's never heard of it before.
See, the only thing I can say in reality was, well, if first time I ever learned anything about coal was about 47. I was a little kid, and all the adults were complaining about the price of it, because that's what everybody had for a furnace in those days.
Sure.
So,
and that's, you know, that's about the one third of the way through point of this ongoing effort that's taken about 150 years to get the planet to pretty close to being uninhabitable by humans.
Yep.
Just to go back for a minute, Bill, to what I was saying a minute ago. So the immigrants get brought in because the native hillbillies were getting a little bit sick of being treated like
they were getting
subhumans.
Smart, yes.
And so when they sat down, they brought in, I mean, it is not a joke. Not too far from here, for instance, along the New River, there's a little tiny ghost town called Brooklyn. And it's spelled B-R-O-O-K-L-Y-N.
Don't tell me that's where they brought the immigrants from.
And so the immigrants, the Italian immigrants, the Hungarian immigrants, what have you, would get off the boat in at Ellis Island, and there would be agents of the coal company there saying, you want to go to Brooklyn?
Oh, yeah. Nice.
And the next thing you know, they've been, for lack of a better term, shanghaied to the hills of West Virginia, and you've got cobblers and candle makers and leather workers who get handed a pick and a shovel and a pair of overalls and sent into the hellhole.
Yeah.
And so what had happened is a lot of these people had no family. They were just, you know, because the idea was that they would take the boat, they would then set up housekeeping, they would work their asses off and send money back for the passage for mama and the babies.
Yeah.
And so they tended to hoard their money in gold. And everybody knew about it. Everybody knew that, and we know the nasty little ethnic epithets were used, that the so-and-sos kept it in gold, and they kept it on their person at all times, so that you'd have, if you wanted it, you'd have to kill it.
Yep.
You'd have to kill them. You couldn't. So, oddly enough, knowing that all these guys kept their money on them in extremely liquid form, oddly enough, the ones who died in the hell on earth that was Leyland, West Virginia in 1915 were discovered to not have all that gold on them.
Somebody knew it was there and took it, yes.
Well, somebody who either survived the blast, then scavenged the bodies while down there and walked out with it, or else the people who were tasked with attending to the dead,
yeah,
helped themselves.
Human nature can sometimes it can make you, well, this woman's action.
Welcome to capitalism,
that
you know.
That puts you in awe. And the other one puts you in, you know, when you hear about it. You'd like to grab these people and, you know.
Well, we started this off talking a little bit about mental health, Bill.
Yeah.
This is not the poor, poor, pitiful me part of the program, but it's just reality. You may remember last year when the derecho came through and knocked the horn off the air for, 17 days.
Yep.
We were out of power for 12 days, and then it took the extra days for our internet service provider to get the tubes reconnected. So one of the things that happened when that came through, in addition to the ruination of our roof, was that when the power went out, a massive power surge just blew through this and many other homes.
It'll blow everything out.
Ruined the refrigerator.
Oh, yeah.
And the refrigerator, the refrigerator freezer. Ruined that. Took out the washer. Took out the dryer. Took out the water heater. Took out the stove.
Oh, yeah. If it's electric, it'll
blow. So, and the only reason back here in the studio was protected was because everything back here is on an uninterruptible power supply.
Yes.
That is, like, guaranteed to stop a, you know, massive surge. So, anyway, what that means is that for over a year now, we've been running off to the laundromat, which is 15 miles away, one way.
Yeah.
To do laundry. And this was one of those days.
Oh, boy.
So, I was over at the laundromat,
because today was Purge's first day of school. And he had to have clean clothes. So I'm over there doing mostly my son's laundry and a little bit of mine. And the laundromat was mostly empty except for, well, it was empty except for one other human being. And, you know, I'll talk to a tree, okay? Yeah. I mean, that's part of the reason this program exists.
Well, I've always had this ability. I'll start a conversation with anybody and see what I get, you know?
Right. And the woman turned out to be a fascinating individual. And she began to tell me the story of her father-in-law. And no names need to be brought in, but it happens in the state of Georgia. He lived on, he had had a brilliant career as a mathematics professor at two prestigious universities, and he had retired to a 306-acre spread in southeast Georgia, which in turn he had planted in timber so that his son, in turn, would be able to use the revenue from the timber cutting for retirement income for himself. I mean, that's that kind of multi-generational thinking that we could do a hell of a lot more of. So the old professor lives to a great age. He lives to be 96 years old. But jealous of his independence, he would not let anybody just come in and live with him at his house there in Georgia. And so they did the best they could, but eventually he even came to the realization, listen, I'm going to a home.
Yeah, certain things catch up with you. Yeah.
And so they sign him into this, I don't know, Golden Years Retirement Community. Right. It's a nursing home.
Yeah.
Okay? Because they were worried about him wandering off and getting hurt on his farm. And he was too.
Things happen, yeah.
And so as he got into his 96th year, his mental faculties did what the mental faculties often do of nonagenarians. Even without the deleterious effects of watching Fox, he entered into that realm that we commonly refer to as dementia.
Yeah.
And so the people there at the nursing home were told, you know, don't let him sign himself out. Don't do that. Naturally, therefore, and you know where this is going.
Yep.
They did. And they had no idea where the old fellow was. And they only really noticed he was gone when the aide, the certified nursing assistant, who had brought him his breakfast, noticed his breakfast had been untouched and went and asked the Don, the director of nursing, where's Mr. So-and-so? Oh, he went to a funeral, honey.
Mm-hmm.
Only he hadn't. He had signed himself out and walked away. And they found him later that day with his hat still on, his jacket taken off, rolled up into a pillow, lying next to a culvert, having gone to sleep and died of heat exhaustion, heat stroke.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
and then, when the coroner noted that he had died of heat prostration, or heat stroke, the nursing home called him and called the coroner and said, couldn't you change that cause of death to heart attack or something?
Yeah, okay, but I won't even go into my opinion of medical people, no. I got a Cleveland Clinic story that I can't tell you tonight. Not enough time. I want to get off either with somebody else on. Yeah, a couple other quick things. I had my great-grandfather on my dad's side was an Eastern, I was told at first he was an Eastern Orthodox priest. And that's why he was allowed to get married, blah, blah. The truth of the matter is, you know, he was working the coal mining. He was Austrian, from the Austro-Hungarian. And there, you know, there's plenty of coal mines in that part of the world. So he was running a church, and he fell in love with and married the housekeeper and produced my great-grandfather. So my father's family had to BS me and tell me that, oh, he was Greek Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox, and he was allowed to get married, which may have been true, but I later learned that it wasn't, that he had quit the church, you know. But this is what he was doing, and he was working the coal mining section in Pennsylvania, which was plenty of it. Was it, where was it, around Washington or PA, or where in PA was there? The area of the Molly McGuire.
Oh, yeah, all around in there.
Yeah. Well, I got one more quick question for you. The place you're going tomorrow?
Oh, well, I'm leaving early Saturday morning.
Yeah. Saturday. Yeah, that town you're going to in Maryland?
Yeah.
What's the name of it again?
Cumberland.
If I'm not mistaken, that's the end of the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal.
I do believe so.
And there's a
I know that the CSX still has a massive presence in that town.
Yeah. Because that, I don't think that canal ever hit the Ohio River. I think if it did, the railroads killed it quickly. Because one of the Ohio canals that comes up through Cleveland here was still in operation until there was a big flood in like 1903, 1906, and knocked it out. Because the canal's still there. Saw it, but there was a bike path. I rode down it many times. I was at Cambridge years ago, and I'll leave you with one of those Mr. Stress sick jokes. When I was coming up through the area past the Pawpaw Tunnel, a sign about the Pawpaw Bends, which I said, gee, I'd love to see that. Never did, of course, because stuff hit the fan and the eyes went, and my days of driving and traveling are... If I ever get behind the wheel, you'll hear me blocks before you'll see me. Geez, what's that guy bouncing off of? Everything. But anyway, to make a long story short, there was a big, high fence. I don't know if I used this one or not, told you the story, with interwoven stuff in the fence that blocks your view of what's behind it. And the fence is for Bambi Lee's massage parlor.
Oh, my.
What?
Oh, my.
Yes. And you know why that fence was so high and you couldn't see through it?
So you couldn't see the politicians coming in and out?
Well, that and the big trucks parked back there for the guys who worked over the road and probably weren't even married and whatever, you know. Because I'm not a believer, I'm not a moralist to the point that, Bob, when I was 18 years old, I was hanging out in the neighborhood that was, Mr. Story, Councilman Story in New Orleans would have recognized. And I heard some of the finest, man, the big thing there was organ trios. You know that Jimmy Smith, Jimmy McGriff stuff?
Oh, yeah.
God, I mean, we're talking 61. I was like 18, 19 years old hanging out in places like that. And, you know, that was the old, before the SR started. And I kid people about that SR. I said, man, that was like watching a merry-go-round and waiting to jump on. It was a real cultural part of this country, that whole 60s, 70s thing, and the anti-war era. I took part in many demonstrations. But then all of a sudden, when the draft stopped, in later years, I would bump into some of these guys I had met, and they were gung-ho 100% establishment because they weren't about to get drafted anymore. So, in other words, and a big part of that was just they didn't want to die. And I don't blame them for that, but why didn't you should be holding on to the same ideas so it doesn't happen to the next generation? You should be fighting for the next generation as much as you fought for your own, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll let you go, my friend. Have a good one.
Well, Bill, you have a wonderful evening. Great conversation. Thank you very kindly.
Thank you.
Our buddy, Bill, Mr. Stress, blues legend. In Cleveland and parts beyond, I always enjoy our conversations. Hey, I wanted to share something with you. I'm kind of inspired by this. I asked earlier, I wonder if a petition has been started at change.org or whitehouse.gov. And in response to Antoinette Tuff and a Congressional Medal of Freedom, lo and behold, Mr. Gibson in the chat room, a man of great good heart, took it upon himself to go ahead and create one. It reads as follows. Award the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Ms. Antoinette Hill Tuff for saving the lives of her school children. Award the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Ms. Antoinette Hill Tuff for saving the lives of her schoolchildren and the life of the would-be assailant. Ms. Tuff displayed exemplary courage in the face of danger and applied emotional genius to de-escalate a very dangerous situation. By insisting upon speaking to the disturbed gunman as if he were a human being and keeping him emotionally connected to those around him, Ms. Tuff averted an almost certain disaster. Her courage and wisdom are exemplary. For this, I say she deserves the Presidential Medal of Freedom in honor of her actions. It has two signatures. Now, it has one signature. Now, it has two. If you would like to add yours, you can go there. If you follow me on Twitter, I just tweeted it, and so you can find a link to the petition and sign it yourself. Gosh, we only need 99,998 more. No time like the present. Whitehouse.gov/petition, or if you search or whatever, award the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Ms. Antoinette Hill Tuff. Go looking, or check my timeline on Facebook or my feed on Twitter, either way. Mr. Gibson noting, we can do it, Bob. The power of the interweb tubes. Thank you, Bean. That is in the stack because it's one of those. It's another story. It is it's kind of strange the way we talk about things here, and then a couple of days later, the things that we've been talking about on the horn obtain their own independent reality. Oh, by the way, before, and I don't think we will. I don't think moving along from a story is appropriate in this regard, but I wanted to make sure that I shared with you a comment I just got via Skype from the Angry Indian. He said, Bob, this is talking about Antoinette Tuff. This is why I get irate when folks talk bad about common people. That sister understood the situation and realized she needed to talk to the cat, not make him more upset. She makes me proud because I was raised and protected by people like her. This is why I struggle for a better world, because I know that the minority of bastards that bogart the party are just that, a sick-minded, fear-laden minority who are afraid of the dark. And that's so true. That line, I was raised and protected by people like her. And how many of us can say that sort of thing? Gracious. And it is what makes it special. But no, what Bean had suggested, he said, Bob, I've been in and out, and I'm hoping, the fact of the matter is, for reasons that only the universe could explain. And believe me, when I say universe, I'm not substituting that as some sort of a deity. It's just, I don't know, it's I think of it in far more Jungian terms than I do theological ones. But for some reason or another, we have had considerable discussion over the last couple of weeks about the place, and it is largely a hellish place, occupied by transgender people in this culture, and many others. And lo and behold, the story breaks today about Chelsea Manning. You may have previously known her as Bradley, because that was the way the culture perceived her. But Bean says in the chat room, I've been in and out, but I'm hoping you can work Chelsea Manning and some feminized pronouns into a broadcast pretty soon. If you haven't already, it'd be nice for her, considering. Yeah, it would.
Here is the note that the person formerly known as Bradley Manning wrote to those people who have been supportive through this ongoing ordeal and subsequent to her having been sentenced to, Jesus Christ, 35 years in prison, and there are hopeful people who say, yeah, but that'll only be 8. Anybody who uses only in front of a number that is related to time spent in Fort Leavenworth, I think all the starch goes out of only. But this is the letter. I want to thank everybody who has supported me over the last 3 years, she wrote. Throughout this long ordeal, your letters of support and encouragement have helped keep me strong. I'm forever indebted to those who wrote to me, made a donation to my defense fund, or came to watch a portion of the trial. I would especially like to thank Courage to Resist and the Bradley Manning Support Network for their tireless efforts in raising awareness for my case and providing for my legal representation. As I transition into this next phase of my life, I want everyone to know the real me. I'm Chelsea Manning. I am a female. Given the way that I feel and have felt since childhood, I want to begin hormone therapy as soon as possible. I hope that you will support me in this transition. I also request that starting today you refer to me by my new name and use the feminine pronoun except in official mail to the confinement facility. Jesus, the confinement facility. I look forward to receiving letters from supporters and having the opportunity to write back. So, again, another member of the military. First, we had a Navy SEAL who came out and came out of the military and then out of the closet and began transitioning to her real gender. And now, Chelsea Manning. A photograph was introduced at trial, taken, it appears to be, in an automobile, showing the then Bradley Manning, done up with makeup and a wig, prior to her military enlistment, to support the fact that, yes, she had been transgendered or transsexual or whatever the appropriate term is, well before any of the things, well before enlistment and before the WikiLeaks scandal. Now bear in mind, people subjected to the tender mercies of the military prison system are not afforded transition. Who happen to be transgendered are not afforded transition and are not afforded gender reassignment surgery. And according to Manning's lawyer, she hasn't even made, because certain assumptions are made that one always has to have sex reassignment surgery. That's not the case, apparently. But it creates a greater sense of pathos around this whole case. And I feel, well, who cares what I feel? I've got a story here in the stack that WikiLeaks, on the heels of the revelations that Julian Assange is as right-wing as they come insofar as he believes that the libertarian teabagger Rand Paul, Ron Paul types. By the way, you know Ron Paul will be attending an anti-Semitism conference here soon, if he hasn't already. No, he's not. Ron Paul is not attending a conference to battle or talk about how to defeat anti-Semitism. He's attending a conference of anti-Semites.
And if he wasn't a senator and if he wasn't thinking he was feeling kind of presidential froggy, I have no doubt that loving son Aqua Buddhist Rand would be right there with him. But according to this story that I have before me, which comes from Agence France-Presse, Julian Assange on Thursday took responsibility for the resignation of a key candidate from his WikiLeaks party running in Australian elections, blaming his focus on Edward Snowden and Bradley Manning, Chelsea Manning. The fledgling party is in crisis after its number two candidate for the Australian Senate behind Assange, ethicist Leslie Canald, said she was disillusioned with its lack of transparency and accountability and quit. Really? WikiLeaks has a lack of accountability and transparency? Well, dip me in gravy and call me biscuit. It's if I was part of that community, I think I would be more than a little dismayed to find that Mr. Assange is a devotee of the Pauls, father and son. If I was a non-U.S. citizen and knew anything about American politics, I think I would have run screaming from the room to find out that Julian Assange thinks that the most vote-suppressing anti-democracy elements of the right wing in this country, in his opinion, represent the last best hope of democracy in the United States. And I'll say this, and I'm sure I'll get some grief for this. Julian Assange rode Chelsea Manning like a barred mule. And so did some other people. Well, they're not going to do 35 years in Leavenworth that turn out to be only 8. And the people who flew the helicopter gunship that set its sights on journalists doing their work and civilians in the wrong place at the wrong time, they're not going to do 35 years that maybe will only be 8 in Leavenworth. No, there are people who are going to continue to cash checks based on the miserable, putrescent crap that Chelsea Manning gave to a largely indifferent American body politic and to a much more interested world. I cannot imagine. You want to talk about courage? Since we seem to be talking a little bit about courage this evening, you want to talk about courage? Courage was on full display by Antoinette Tough. Courage was also on display by a trans woman, I guess is the phrase, who saw manifest injustice and rather having tasted it all of her life, decided to do something about the injustices that she could, even if she could do nothing for herself. And in this instance, knowing that she's headed to Leavenworth, to go ahead and say, I'm going to be who I am. Because whatever else you take away from me, you cannot take that. Can you imagine the guts that it takes to announce before you've ever heard the doors slam behind you in that hell on earth that is Fort Leavenworth, Kansas,
to do what she did? Wow. Will has been patiently waiting on the Skype line. Hey, Will.
Hey, Bob. Very weary about this. I've tried unsuccessfully to research how long the people who fired on the Reuters journalists and then on their civilian rescuers got someone at the Malloy chat yesterday said it wasn't anywhere near Manning's sentence. So I have to ask, if we are at a place where exposing secrets is a worse crime than the war crime of firing on rescuers and reporters. It's very depressing, and I fear for Chelsea Manning's safety in Leavenworth, because it's what I call the celebrity phenomenon. Someone will target a celebrity prisoner, which is why I wasn't too surprised that Jeffrey Dahmer didn't last long in his incarceration, and which is why some suspects have to be isolated for their own safety. I can
But the last thing she needs is a little more solitary.
Exactly. That's the last thing, because even the judge reduced the sentence for the time spent in solitary, which is recognized as a form of torture. Simply, if you deprive a person from all contact, as well as do weird things with heat and cold, leave them naked in a cell, and try to mentally break them, it's called torture. And what we had in this case was torture. And although I understand those who will say, well, there must be some consequences for the actions of leaking stuff, compared with the war crimes that we saw went on in Iraq, in Afghanistan, leaking documents is trivial compared to human life. There's an old Jewish saying, he who saves a life saves an entire world. And what Chelsea Manning did was to shine a very ugly light onto what was going on in a war. And those actions may have helped lead us to today's status of the U.S. is more or less out of Iraq. And yet I have to honestly wonder, where do we go from here? And Bob, you lied about Mr. Assange using Manning. It reminded me of a line from the second Michael Keaton Batman movie, where Danny DeVito as the Penguin says, "I played this town like a harp out of hell."
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Manning must feel he's been played, since where were the people raising a clarion call to say?
Well, and but let's be clear about something, Will. The Julian Assange is merely the most high-profile individual who played Ms. Manning like a harp out of hell.
Yep.
I remember a couple of years back, probably it was, a conversation with Sandra in which we talked about the Bradley Manning Advocacy Project that was being run by a certain internet star, I guess we'll use the term star, that had nothing to do with hiring lawyers and had nothing to do with much of anything at all, except for appearing to be a great big hustle on her back. And just, you know, sitting here in the hills and hollers where I am, I was disgusted by it. I mean,
yep.
Jesus, even with people who are ostensibly on our own side, does everybody have to profit from somebody else?
Someday, I quipped in the horn chat earlier that it seems all it is about making money in the United, this United States of Ferenginar. I mean,
that
really?
Was, I saw that. That was good. The dis United States of Ferenginar. For anyone, for any Trekkies out there, you're going to get that immediately.
Yeah.
We are the Ferengi.
Yes.
Adam Smith was a Ferengi. Ayn Rand was a Ferengi. Milton Friedman was a Ferengi. Whoever that freak was that started the so-called Austrian school was a goddamn Ferengi.
Mies, Van Mies something.
Yeah. Ludwig von Mises.
Yes. I hate Mises to pieces, to use an old cartoon reference. But I view this affair as very tragic. While I understand, there has to be some charges, 35 years for leaking documents, when it's likely that the people who fired on that.
I've got the answer to that little piece of inquiry, Will. If you're sitting down and strapped in, and you got the tennis balls handy.
I've been almost accused of having pointed ears and green blood, to continue with the Star Trek theme. And some days I wish I was, so I could distance myself from humanity.
Well, Ron in Raleigh writes in to answer the question, and he says, the helicopter crew that shot up the reporters in cold blood were found not guilty of any wrongdoing. They were set free. You know, fog of war and all that stuff.
This is why, for those like myself who believe there is a sort of transcendent justice in the universe. How would I say it? If there is anything like a hell, I imagine there were several layers added for that crew. But I mean, here's the thing, nothing. And yet we have Manning in prison. And the sad thing is, we as a people have the flaw of most nations, and that, namely, that we hate taking a look at ourselves, particularly at our flaws. I mean, it's rather embarrassing to realize how far we have to come. We have the sequel to the March on Washington for Freedom and Jobs this weekend, and yet we still have things happening, such as a lawmaker in Colorado, a Republican senator named Vicky Marvel, who said the reasons that African Americans and Hispanics have increased poverty is because they're eating more fried chicken.
Yeah, that's one of those that's in the stack, and I just, holy.
Yeah, that
I live in this perpetual state, Will, of thinking I am beyond being shocked. You know, I'm just jaded old alligator-hided Bob who can no longer be surprised or shocked by anything that these vicious effing trolls of the right wing do. And then along comes, Senator Vicky Marble, as you noted, who says that, it's blame it on the fried chicken.
Yeah, I mean, I'd almost rather... and then we have, of course, Ron Paul, going with the John Birch Society president up to Canada to speak at a conference sponsored by the Fatima Center. I found that on Southern Poverty Law Center, and they call it, here's the irony, the conference is titled, hold on to your seats, folks, Fatima, the Path to Peace. And as a call, according to Fatima Center press release, to return to sanity and the government of the world and the church, so the two cannot be separated. And I mean, we have numerous people attending the conference who honestly are probably making the guy in Leith, North Dakota, who's buying up land so he can set up his neo-Nazi only town. That's something I found on Raw Story this afternoon, and the actual town there is upset. And the thing is, I can't decide what's worse, a nut case in the middle of the prairies of North Dakota, a Colorado lawmaker, or a U.S. senator.
Right. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Ms. By the way, Will, Ms. Marble.
Yeah.
Who I don't think will ever match wits, match for wits the qualities of Ms. Marple. Ms. Marble was not just on about black folks.
Yep.
No, she had something to say about Mexicans, too.
Yep, because...
The Mexican diet in Mexico, with all of the fresh vegetables, and you go down there, and they're much thinner than they are up here. They've changed their diet.
There's a wonderful curse from Anne McCaffrey's Pern novels, and I will use it for this woman, for the fool in North Dakota, and a certain member of the Senate. May their orifices congeal and their extremities rot off.
Hear, hear.
I mean, good heavens. I have known people, either professionally or through hobbies, from every continent on the planet that has a reasonable population. I'm leaving out Antarctica because I haven't dealt with any of the researchers there. For the school kids from Chile, their Chile ships in it for a few months each year. But from my studies, I noticed certain things. And generally, if you are poor, you tend to stretch out food.
You tend to eat less valuable calories.
Exactly, because that's what you can't afford. I mean,
right. Let me just go here for a minute, Will. I happened to be listening to National Petroleum Radio on the way home this afternoon, and they had one of those feature stories that I just love because I love food stories. So it was the story about how a farmer in upstate New York received a couple of dried cobs of corn in the mail. And an explanation that it was 7-row Flint corn, which is an heirloom corn that was originally grown by New Englanders because it's awesome corn. But it doesn't produce, it's not a high-yield stalk. I mean, the stalks will grow to 9 feet tall. And they're really beautiful to see, but they don't have a lot of corn cobs on them. But the corn that you get off them of them has this rich, rich golden color, and it's absolutely, I mean, corn left to its own devices is a brilliant food. I mean, it's got vitamin C, it's got protein, it's got sugars, starches, carbs. What? And in this case, because it's this bright golden orange color, it has this vast concentration of carotenoids, the same thing that turns a carrot orange. Okay, and then they told the story about how there's a restaurateur there who is so in love with this 7 or 8 row Flint corn, this heirloom corn, that he's trying to revive it, and he's trying to and he's so in love with it that he moved his restaurant right to the very farm itself, so he could be close to the field where the guy to whom he sent the corn cobs is now growing the corn for him to use in his restaurant. So you've got the little National Petroleum Radio reporter there, and she's querying, and she says, and he took me to his kitchen where it's a bad thing when anybody rides in the car with me because I'm turning into my father, Will. My father screamed at the TV. I yell at the radio. And she starts talking about how in the mid 19th century 8-row Flint corn was exported to Italy, where it became tremendously popular because of how wonderful it is for polenta. And then she starts talking about how the guy with the restaurant's going to make her some polenta, and she said, and all he adds is the cornmeal and some water and some salt. And he gives her a taste. Oh, my goodness, there's no butter in there? No, isn't it wonderful? Yes, it is. And I'm screaming in the car going down the road, it's effing grits! It's effing grits!
Exactly, the southern answer to the same dilemma that lots of populations face. Instead of pasta or gefilte fish or tacos, it was grits for much of the South. And I mean, honestly, when we have legislators being that ignorant, I don't know what I fear worse, the legislators or the people who put them in office.
Well, bless, there is kind of a happy ending to the story about this idiot in Colorado.
Yeah.
Because, a Democrat by the name of Representative Rhonda Fields blasted her.
Oh, yes.
She said, the title for this committee is the Economic Opportunity Poverty Reduction Task Force, and one of the things I will not tolerate is racist and insensitive comments about African Americans, the color of their skin. You mentioned what we eat. I was highly offended by your remarks. I will not engage in a dialogue where I'm in the company where you're using the stereotype references about African Americans and chicken and food and all kinds of things. I just will not tolerate that. This is not what this committee is all about. So I will ask that you suspend your perceptions and judgments about African Americans, about poverty. What we're trying to do is come up with solutions, and it's not about chicken. It's not about eating chicken. And then State Senator John Kefalas, another Democrat who chairs the committee, it's apparently in the hands of the Democrats, they're the majority, he called a recess so we can all take a deep breath. Kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya. No, you know what he needed to do? Senator John Kefalas needed to sit there and call on every Democrat on that committee to chew on Vicky Marble a little more until there wasn't nothing left of her but a greasy spot.
Which might actually be her best contribution to the planet by returning
Amen.
To it. Because I see from one of the stories that I sent that after the hearing, Marvel issued a statement to insist their comments were not meant to be disparaging to any community, and then they were taken in that regard.
Yeah, again, it's one of the
apology.
Bingo. I mean, it's one of those right wing apologies, Will, where it's your fault for being offended. It's your fault that they're offensive.
Yes. I mean, good heavens. I mean, honestly, now we can see why John Bolton is considered a diplomat in the right wing of the Republican Party.
Jesus.
That sort of mentality. I mean, good heavens. I mean, this is what is really a bit of the thorn in my side. People who hate people just for not being themselves. I'm sorry. Humanity is diverse. Get over it. And yet, genetically, as a species, there is very little variation among us which is why we can do things like organ donation and the like. We're not as closely related as cheetahs, which really had a bad genetic bottleneck, it looks like, about 10,000 or so years ago. But all geneticists will say that every human being on the planet has a common ancestry, which can be tracked to the mitochondria. Now, some populations different. For example, non-sub-Saharan populations usually have 1 to 4% Neanderthal or Denisovan DNA from the Denisovans being relatives of the Neanderthal, meaning that, our heritage is diverse. And guess what? From working with people from all over the world, from talking to people all over the world, I find good and bad in all of them. And if we could just get rid of the fear that some people have of the other, we could actually build a world that is worthy of our children and the best among us. We could build that world that Dr. King spoke of some 50 years ago. And I think were he still among us, he'd still be fighting with every last breath of his aged body. Imagine that, an old Dr. King.
Yeah, I've actually done that from time to time.
Yeah, yelling at people like Marble, criticizing Ron Paul, and taking a stand. Sadly, he can't be here. So my call to the audience tonight is take a stand. Be active in your community. One mild thing you can do, although not so minor here for purposes of our discussions to help Bob out here at the Horn Radio Network. But things you can do is be the voice who says no when someone says something hateful. Be the voice who says, yes, I'm going to be the person who helps out in my community, whether it's something like joining the precinct committee of a local party, working in a soup kitchen, donating clothes to the needy, or even running for office in your own town, because that's what the GOP has done. They got a very deep farm team, which is how they've been able to promote people like Michelle Bachmann up the ladder. We can make a difference, and that, I think, is one of the key things we need to remember this weekend as we recall the March on Washington, that the power is in our hands, that we have a choice, that we can build this better world. It is up to us to make sure that the arch of history bends towards freedom and justice.
Yeah. And thank you very kindly for the kind words, as you always and often offer them. Well, we seem to have hit a wall at $100 this evening. So, with about 22 minutes left in the program, I guess we're just going to stay in the hole for the night.
Well, remember, every little bit counts. So even if you can donate pocket change, instead of spending it on ice cream cones at a fast food restaurant, which is the purpose of one of their campaigns, how about putting some of that change together, hitting the PayPal button, and lending Bob a hand? It's more nutritious to you than that ice cream, simply because you'll be contributing to the discourse of ideas. And besides, you can probably get much better ice cream from someplace other than a fast food place.
Amen. Amen to that. Hey, I was going to share one more. You said earlier in the conversation that you could only imagine the nasty stuff that had come out of the right wing in regard to Chelsea Manning's statement today.
That's because I was purposely not looking at it.
Okay, then I won't subject you to it.
Oh, I'll put up with it. But can I please be forgiven if I think of some of those people having a collision with a very small asteroid?
Oh, I'm okay if you want it to make it a bigger asteroid. It's kind of like that line from the W.C. Fields movie, The Bank Dick, where Egbert Soussé is walking away from his house and his horrible little family, and his little boy looks at him and says, "Mother, may I hit father with a rock?" And she says, "Respect your elders, son. How big a rock?" So, no, you're perfectly within the bounds of your rights in what you say there. No, the reason I mention is that because the minute I saw this story break, I knew, as sure as God made little green apples, and if you eat too many of them, you'll get a bellyache in the trots, that somebody would go running to Life of Brian. You familiar with the film?
Yes.
You know the scene where they're sitting in the amphitheater and Stan comes out as Loretta? They're a predictable lot, these little right-wing jackasses. Charles C.W. Cook, whom I would not know from Adam's house cat and do not care to, tweeted, "Breaking, surrounded by other freedom fighters, Bradley Manning announces he wants to be a woman," and immediately cited to the Loretta scene from Life of Brian. Adam Baldwin, one of the Baldwin brothers, who is certainly not the sharpest of the Baldwins, nor even the third most successful, tweeted, "Which came first, Bradley Manning's treason or his insanity?" And then there's Laura Ingraham.
Oh, yes, her.
"So Manning wants to live as a woman. Let me guess, we have to pay for it. Hashtag outrage." No, we don't have to pay for it. It is one of the brutalities of our system that we don't. Then there's Timothy P. Carney. "If Manning had..." And this one, just after the time that we have spent on this issue,
I guess, according to the universe, as sort of prelude to this, and the explanations that have been offered about why not to define a person by something as silly as their external or their, you know, their genitalia. Here comes Timothy P. Carney, another one of those Adam's house cat types that I hope to remain forever oblivious of. If Manning still has, and you know, anybody in the Horn family commune will could answer this question. If Manning still has all male body parts, and his name is legally Bradley, isn't it factually inaccurate for a journalist to call him her? It would seem to me that Timothy P. Carney has given itself away as not a journalist.
Yep.
Then there's Jim Garrity. I seem to recall his name as being some sort of two-legged turd. Insert Corporal Klinger joke about Bradley Manning here. And, well, there you go.
Well, perhaps we can be forgiven if momentarily some of us in the listening audience wish all those people will one day be gathered in a place that will shortly thereafter be referred to as Meteor Crater, Oklahoma.
Well, yes, that, or like the preacher in the Colbert Report piece of a week or so ago about Vico, Kentucky. Maybe they can all just turn into that hateful preacher who couldn't explain what he was doing in a gay bar in Dallas, but was somehow compelled to tell the world that he'd been there. I mean, you know the final scene of The Birdhouse with Gene Hackman in drag boogieing his way out of the bar?
Yeah.
These guys.
Well, to quote Friedrich von Schiller, a German playwright, against stupidity, the gods themselves contend in vain. I think the...
I'm writing that one down.
Yes, that is a very powerful quote, sometimes wrongfully attributed to Friedrich Nietzsche, but this is one of those sayings that should be carved into stone for public display, and we should put people's pictures up underneath such a display as examples. And Ron Paul, the idiot in North Dakota, and Miss Senator Marvel would all be there as well as those pundits. Simply
don't move. Don't move. We're taking a picture. Don't move. Is the asteroid here yet? Don't move. Yeah. No, we're taking it from it's a big lens. Y'all stand still now. Right. A couple of nice observations coming in the chat room. First, Bean, you mean Obamacare doesn't mandate universal sex changes? How'd that slip through the agenda? more along the lines of the profound track with regard to Timothy P. Carney, idiot non-journalist, about isn't it factually inaccurate for a journalist to call him her. Lottie, our chat room moderator, one of them, merely notes the usage of the correct pronoun when addressing a transgendered person doesn't go by genitalia, but by respect for the individual. And maybe that's where we wind up. They ain't got no respect for no individuals.
Exactly. If it doesn't fit their very narrow definition of what a proper person is, well, they have to be subhuman or demonic.
And I refer people to Dr. John's definitional differences between the right-wing preference for agency versus our side's preference for performance.
Yes. Well,
hey, Will, have yourself a very good evening, and I thank you very kindly
evening.
For all of your...
Be well, and everyone, remember, every little bit does help to keep Dr. Bill and Bob on the air, so let's do what we can. Let's make sure we don't have an August home. Well, maybe how about an August mountain to build off of?
That would be awfully nice because, like I said before, September is going to be brutal with me being gone for at least 2 weeks. And,
Yeah, you get the idea. Thanks, Will. Have a good evening.
Bye. Have a good evening.
And thanks to Jason for kicking in. We are that takes us to $120 and leaves us about 18 $10 contributions short. But thank you very much, Jason, for helping us move along and move the little marker a little higher up the totem pole. Ron and Raleigh asking, hey, Bob, is that quote from the German playwright, is that the erudite version of Ron White's "You can't fix stupid"? I think it is. Even the gods against stupidity, even the gods themselves contend in vain. Phew. I think I'm going to run down to the tattoo parlor and get that on the back of my neck. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Bob. It's Mark, the big tough Marine.
Hey, Mark, what's happening?
Hey, Bob, I just wanted to call and comment on Bradley Manning's case. I would agree with the gentleman who was the one that Richard Nixon wanted to kill, my fellow Marine, who smuggled out the Pentagon Papers.
No, Ellsberg.
Yeah, Daniel Ellsberg, for the listeners that don't remember the fact that Richard Nixon actually wanted him killed, murdered, assassinated, and then they dropped it down a notch to actually destroy him in the press with their connections to the Washington Post or whatever the hell paper that the Republicans, one of many that they controlled with the help of the Hearst family as well as many others. So, and then they broke into Ellsberg's doctor's office to find records where he was seeking counseling. The one gentleman that was just on the phone, Will, if he's still listening, which I'm sure that he is, Bob, that I had a criminal law professor at Coastal Carolina Community College who had been a sergeant in the Korean War, gotten out and gotten a college degree and came back in the Marine Corps and went from carrying a machine gun to becoming a JAG officer. He was the instructor. He was a retired civilian instructor for the college there that taught courses on the Marine Corps base, Camp Lejeune. And he said, I'm going to tell you Marines in this class, there may have been 10 of us, Bob, something that many people don't know, and I would hope that you guys don't share this widely. But out of all the horrific things that happened in Vietnam, anything that the mind can imagine, crimes, Americans on Americans, Americans on Vietnamese, whatever the circumstances, no American really served more than 3 to 5 years. And he said that, he was still earning his pay, Bob, that he would go in, I was probably a captain at the time, and as soon as the Marines would take a hill, after how many days it would take to fight or hours to get up to the top of the hill, that one of the first choppers on the scene were court-martial helicopters, and they would hold court right there on the tops of hills and take Marines away in handcuffs from the tops of those hills for crimes that they had committed somewhere lower in the bush on each other, or fragging or murder or rape. And he said that, most Americans, but he said that he did explain it, not to justify it. He didn't seem to have an attitude in that regard. He was a pretty objective human being that he considered that all they, whoever the powers that be, that was all committed under the auspices of war. I think what Bradley Manning's courage about his sexuality, and I think his commitment towards justice, are very strong characteristics of a good soldier, a good warrior. And I think it takes probably as much courage to declare the person that he truly wants to be or truly believes that he is than it does, Bob, to rush into somebody that's shooting at you. I think the courage to become a transgender person in this gun-toting, right-wing, ignorant nation not getting any smarter takes so much divine courage. I don't know what you call it. I really, they're amazing human beings, and they're just being true to themselves, and I think that's that regard. That in my case, it demands much respect. I find them very courageous people, no matter where they are in the world. They're just being who they want to be. Whether it's a woman, you know, that leans toward being masculine, or a male towards a female. So I think it's, but it's funny that all he did was display the shooting, you know, the illegal shootings of about 30 people, and then they, and the jackasses stayed in the air with their high-tech stuff under no threat, and then shot people that are coming to the rescue of their friends. These men had on golf shirts and long-sleeve shirts and slacks and belts and loafers, no guns. And if anybody hasn't seen that, it's on YouTube. But that's the only thing I caught out of the Bradley Manning case. And I would agree with you on...
Well, the larger cache of WikiLeaks stuff, Mark, also contains, and I would suggest that perhaps even more so than exposing that gunship-borne slaughter, it exposes a very, very cynical and a very... It's a tough combination, Mark, the combination between having a cynical foreign policy and having a foreign policy that's none too bright in the first place. And that's what got exposed, and that is what pissed off the national security state.
Well, it's illegal predatorship, or what would be the word? It's even the jackass in Florida who ran for senator, I have to give him a little bit of credit. Larry Klayman with Judicial Watch took the request to the Supreme Court, and they finally released it under the Bush administration. 43, where they disclosed the Cheney energy, you know, policy, which, that shows their preemptive desires to control the oil, and in the number of countries that had their hands on it, to include the one diplomat that was mentioned earlier in the show, you know, apart from Elliot Abrams and the rest of the criminal Wolfowitz neocon objectives people. We're still feeling the effects of it's showing you that don't speak any truth to power. It will come down hard on you. And there's your free country for you. I know you got to go, Bob.
No, free. It's become rather a loaded term, hasn't it, Mark?
Free. Good luck if you don't march between the lines.
You know, I got to tell you, are you a John Prine fan? You know, him being an Illinois guy and you being an Illinois guy. And...
No, I understand. No, I don't know. I don't know who he is, Bob.
I play him from time to time here, and I've got a song queued up, or I've had a song queued up for a while now to sort of save for just such a moment.
Okay.
But I highly suggest you go and find a John Prine song called That's the Way Every Empire Falls. You will be deeply moved.
Gotcha.
So I'm awfully glad we got a chance to have a conversation as the program began to wind down this evening, Mark, and I look forward to hearing from you again. Thank you for your insights.
You're welcome, and it's nothing that you don't ever always know, and your intelligence is an education. Have always been educational to me and very impressive, and they're not based on bullshit, and that's the thing I like about good Americans like yourself. You were the person that I strapped on a rifle for, nothing else.
Thank you very kindly, Mark. It's just not in my nature to run around. I'm not nearly as impressed with my intelligence as other people seem to be, so that's one of the things that prevents me being able to run around saying, see, look, oh, smart guy. Oh, he's a smart progressive. I can't do that shtick, Mark.
I'm just a dumb farm, corn-fed Midwesterner that can say it for you, because I mean it from my heart. And we can't learn from each other. Our egos are way too fragile anyway. I know you got to go, Bob. I love listening to all the callers from Bill and Cleveland and Will, wherever he calls from. His voice is really neat to listen to. And the older gentleman from Texas.
Edward.
Yes, Edward, who speaks out for, freedom of loving whoever you want. It's a courageous crowd, and we are the true leaders, people who speak up for progressive rights and for justice and anti-war I'm proud to say I protest the Iraq war right along with you, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. You have a good evening. Be well.
You too.
Bye now. Well, this is another one of those evenings. And by that, I mean this is another one of those where'd the program go kind of evenings. But, yeah, we're 2 hours and 56 minutes and change, or 2 hours and 57 minutes and change done with all this. So I'll thank you very kindly. And, yes, there will be a program tomorrow night. And I reiterate, Friday on the front porch, if you want to join in the Skype group, send me your contact info. I'll send it to Duncan, and we'll make and you'll be part of the Friday on the front porch crowd tomorrow evening and perhaps Fridays on into the future. So with that having been said, thanks to all of you for helping to support our ongoing effort to keep this effort ongoing. And thank you very kindly for your participation in every way. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you. Thank you very much to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And acheact.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.